Hi, everybody, and welcome to what may be the beginning of our opportunity to read through esoteric astrology together. It's a wonderful book written by the Tibetan master. It has almost 700 pages in it. And what I'd like to do in a fairly spontaneous way is to share my thoughts paragraph by paragraph, line by line, as we go. This webinar is sort of a private webinar. It's just between me and myself, in a way, and I'll make it available to you on the Makara website and maybe on other websites. We will also have webinars where I will inform you in plenty of time and you can attend. You'll have the sign-up address. And you will be able to ask questions about what we discuss, and if you've studied what is on the previous webinars, you may have accumulated questions. So some of our webinars may simply be question and answers. But for the moment, I'm simply beginning this at a certain time here in Phoenix, Arizona, and I'll show you the astrological chart of the beginning. I will try to keep these webinars in approximately hour-long segments and make them available to you quite soon so you can begin to download them and study the material with me. The astrological chart is immediately before you. You should be able to see everything, and I will go over a few points. We are obviously in the sign Aries, the sign of new beginnings and of pioneering efforts. This has been something I've wanted to do for many years, a very careful examination of esoteric astrology. Of course, I realize that if I were to sit down with the book and write everything out, perhaps there would be greater accuracy and less spontaneity, and it would certainly take me 10 years, which is not possible because this information has to be spread widely among those who are thinking about the new astrology and the new psychology. So I've decided on the more spontaneous approach. That means perhaps that I hardly know what I'm going to say next, and I may make mistakes which later have to be corrected, but I will share with you the thoughts that come to my mind as we study the Tibetans' work together. Now, you may be interested in this astrological chart, which you should be able to see, because I'm showing you my screen, and if all works well, the screen will show. We are in Aries, and we are in the very first decanate of Aries, which spiritually is ruled by Jupiter. You might think it would be ruled by Mars, because when you do the normal decanate systems, for instance in Aries, it would be Aries sub Aries for the first 10 degrees, Aries sub Leo for the degrees 10 to 20, and then Aries sub Jupiter for 20 to 30. But the Tibetan tells us that Jupiter and also Venus are instrumental in this first decanate. We are, as well, interestingly, we are in the Taurus Dwadashamsa. A dwad, D-W-A-D, is a measurement of 2.5 degrees, which comes from dividing the 12 signs of the zodiac into the 30 degrees of a sign. So 12 into 30 is 2.5 degrees. And the first dwad is Aries, Aries. Well, we're not in that. We're in the Aries sub-Taurus dwad. And so I hope that the light illumination of Taurus will illumine our way. We are involved here in an exercise in intuition. We will try to create together, because I'm thinking of you as I do this, a method of invoking intuitive light upon the group aura. And hopefully thoughts will descend into our minds and into our group mind, which will be unusually revelatory and will give us an idea of this new and wonderful astrology which the Tibetan has offered us and of which he has given us perhaps simply the seed, but he said it would be enough for us to begin to develop the new astrology. So we're in the pioneering sign Aries, and you notice here that the planet Uranus is exactly conjunct, within 2 degrees, very close. Uranus, of course, is the astrologer's planet. In a way, every planet is the astrologer's planet, but Uranus gives a special occult mind to be brought to the subject. And so we can see archetypes more clearly through the influence of the planet Uranus. We ought to be able to extend our minds into the abstract mind, into the spiritual triad, and perhaps bring down some of the higher patterns and perspectives which can only be seen in the higher part of a human being's nature. All of this, by the way, is taking place in the ninth house of higher mind, the upper part of the Antikorana, if you will, the upper part of the Rainbow Bridge, where we begin to touch those aspects of ourselves which are beyond the personal and are even, in a way, beyond the individual. Because indeed we do have parts of our nature which are planetary and even universal, and we're interested in touching those. So we may get flashes of illumination, let us hope, new ideas which we have not had before, all coming in through Aries, Uranus, and the Sun. And we notice here that Jupiter is also within range of the Sun, a wide conjunction, but we have here what is called translation of light, which means that if A is conjunct to B, is conjunct to C, is conjunct to D, then they're all, in a way, conjunct with each other, and they form one stellium of planets in Aries. And I've been waiting a long time to do this. I tried to figure out when in the world to begin talking to you about astrology and how to do it. And I had a notion to do it in Capricorn, and then a notion to do it in Aquarius, and I pretty much passed by the idea of doing it in Pisces. I didn't want to do that because that's more a sign of culmination than it is of inauguration. But then I knew, and I began to have the feeling that it would be done in Aries. So Jupiter in Aries offers an opportunity to expand on the new ideas. It's a position of great potential for new undertakings. It opens the door to things that have not been done before, and it gives great enthusiasm and the belief in oneself, confidence. So we do need that, because this is a long study. I cannot pretend it's a short study. I've been studying it all my life, it seems like. Certainly, maybe since I was 23 years old, so at least 45 years I've been studying astrology, and more recently esoteric astrology. So Jupiter is dignified in the ninth house of higher mind, of worldview, of occult philosophy, in many ways the house of the ageless wisdom, which gives us a very broad and deep understanding of our relationship to the planetary process and to the solar systemic process and beyond. We go on and we see that Mercury is there as well, and Mercury, as some of you will know, is the esoteric ruler of Aries, and so it's placed in its own sign. And Mercury in Aries burns the jungles of illusion. The jungle of illusion dissolves in flames, and the path stands free. I have a song about that, actually, for Mercury, and maybe I'll find a way to share some of this music in these webinars, because they are written on astrological themes. So the possibility of absorbing the new ideas and of clarifying the many illusions of the lower mind and of bringing the seeds of archetypal ideas down into the personal consciousness, this is all here when Mercury is in Aries. Actually, I included as well one of the newly discovered planets or planetoids out there near Pluto, beyond Pluto. It's called Eris, and it's exactly in the same degree as Mercury. And Eris has a strong fifth ray component. It's very discriminative. In a way, it's the sort of the goddess of warfare. It's a bit like the warrior goddess Xena. Some of you saw her in that television series. This gives us an enterprising mentality, highly discriminative. Hopefully we can be very, very clear about many matters which are, at first sight, not especially clear. Now, all of these are related to each other in a translation of light. Every time I press the screen, the picture will disappear, but it doesn't have to be up that often. We have here, for the degree of Uranus, a woman has risen out of the ocean and a seal is embracing her and I think trying to pull her back. So that's the very beginning of Aries, and one is emerging from the ocean of the unconscious and trying to make a new statement, a bold new archetypal statement. Uranus, as some of you will know, is the highest ruler of Aries. Now, most of us are familiar with ordinary astrological rulerships. A planet is a god, a planetary god, and it is related to a still greater god who is the lord of a constellation. Now, these planets have customary relationships with certain constellations or signs of the zodiac. A sign of the zodiac really is a concentration of energy around a planet, divided in 12 parts, each area allowing the energy of the constellation to reach the planet. It especially adapts the energy of the constellation to planetary affairs. So there is a difference between constellations and signs, and we will discuss that. It's in the page 600s, but I'm sure we'll mention it many times. So anyway, normally Uranus is not connected with Aries, but from a highly esoteric point of view, in fact, what's called the highest type of rulership, which is called hierarchical rulership, then Uranus is indeed the major ruler of Aries. Now, Aries is the primary first-ray sign, at this time especially. And Uranus has a first ray monad, meaning the spirit aspect of Uranus expresses the first ray. So you have a tremendously first ray combination there in the Sun-Uranus connection, conjunction with Uranus as the in its own hierarchical sign, expressing a powerful archetypal first ray. In a way, it is the ray of the enunciator. It's also the ray of the destroyer. There are two aspects to this first ray of will and power. One is destruction, one is enunciation, which means proclaiming a new idea. Now, that's what we're trying to do. 80 years ago, when the Tibetan was writing this book, he was proclaiming a great new idea of which humanity had little conception at the time. And what we're going to try to do is to present some of his thoughts and interpret them in ways that we hopefully can understand. I think if we understand 5% of this book, we'll be doing very well. So profound is the Tibetan's understanding of esoteric astrology. But okay, so we're emerging from the sea of the unconscious and we're proclaiming a new archetype, and that archetype is the archetype of esoteric astrology. The degree of the sun, a cameo profile of a man in the outline of his country. A cameo profile in the of a man in the outline of his country. And so we are going to identify ourselves as a group with a larger whole, and we are going to see our own oneness with the outlines of this larger whole. In this case, the larger whole is the spiritual hierarchy of the planet and the ageless wisdom as a whole. There's a great ideal here, and of course the ninth house, which is normally connected with Sagittarius, is very connected with the ideal vision. We're going to try to achieve an ideal archetypal vision and get a sense of our identification with the larger whole. We will identify ourselves with the larger whole of the ageless wisdom, which we are attempting to study together. The symbol for Jupiter, let's see what it says. A serpent coiling near a man and a woman. These are the Sabian symbols. They were derived by Mark Edmund Jones and a psychic by the name of, was it Elsie Wheeler? It was in Balboa Park in San Diego a long time ago, maybe almost 100 years ago. And Mark Jones felt he had tapped into a treasure trove of Chaldean knowledge. Because one day we're going to discover that each sign of the zodiac has 30 degrees, of course, and each degree is unique and has its own character. So in the symbols for these degrees, somehow these two people were able to arrive at some significant symbols. Many people have found them significant. Maybe they're not perfect, but they can give a good idea of some deeper archetypal reality to every degree. So, okay, a serpent is coiling near a man or woman, and of course it reminds us of Adam and Eve in the garden, Garden of Eden. But the deeper idea here is the serpent wisdom. The serpent is the initiate, so it's the serpent here is the knowledge of the initiates, and we have perhaps a chance to use Jupiter and Aries to expand our mind into the knowledge of the initiates. This is, I think we're in the Virgo Dwad. We're in the Libra Dwad of Jupiter in Aries, trying to create a balance point of view, a mind that has equilibrium in it, can expand in a balanced manner. We have a Jupiter-Mercury conjunction very definitely, and that certainly does expand the mind. Jupiter is the planet of expansion, and Mercury is the planet of illumination and mentation. So Jupiter and Mercury will expand the mind and lead us into a widening horizon of new thought. Perhaps it will take us to the Buddhic plane or the plane of intuition occasionally. From the abstract mind to the plane of intuition. And both Jupiter and Mercury are related to the Buddhic plane. Neptune is as well. Those three planets, Mercury, Jupiter, and Neptune, are all related to the plane of intuition, the Buddhic plane, the fourth plane, the plane of pure reason. Let me try something here. As you see, I have a little map, and this is the map of the constitution of man, the egoic lotus on the centers, and you see this is the fourth plane that we are talking about here, the fourth plane. And it is here that Jupiter, Mercury, and Neptune rule. Okay. I have to find my way back. Okay. Now, what is the symbol for Mercury in this ninth house of higher mind and philosophy? A gate to the garden of desire. Well, I suppose this can be interpreted in a higher and a lower sense. It is certainly our great aspiration to learn more and more about esoteric astrology. DK, Master DK, calls astrology the greatest and the oldest of all the sciences. It is, of course, older than the planet. It is part of the archetypal knowledge of the universe itself. And so that is our aspiration, and perhaps we can enter through this gate, following our aspiration, leading to intuition. And we have the planetoid, or planet, we haven't established yet exactly what it is, Eris, exactly in the same degree. So we will have an assertive mentality here. We will have a questing mentality that is willing to fight against illusion. Of course, we can hardly be successful at that entirely because, you know, until the ninth initiation, we are not free of illusion, and I'm sure that's just the illusions of the cosmic physical plane. You know, this whole thing here is the cosmic physical plane, and we may be free of the illusions of the cosmic physical plane, but will we be free of still greater illusions? Well, so it's a losing battle in a way, but we will be less and less deluded, and that's good. Okay, our midheaven is still in Aries, indicating that it is a pioneering process. The esoteric ruler of the midheaven is Mercury, and the hierarchical ruler is Uranus, so they're all together. Let's see what the degree is here, what it says, Sabian symbols. A celestial choir singing. A celestial choir singing. Well, we want to hear the higher harmonies. We want to hear the harmony of the divine archetypes. We want to attune our ear to the great wisdom of the divine purpose, the fixed design of our solar god. So it's not only a musical indication, but of course we are interested in the harmony of the spheres, just the way Kepler was. We're deeply interested in understanding the harmony of the whole, and so listening to a celestial choir sing, if that influence reaches us, that's all very good. Now, you know, what I'm doing here is I'm sounding out potentials of our opening chart. It doesn't mean we will fulfill all these potentials, and of course, I'm sure there are some challenges here as well. Maybe the rising sign is the most important thing in the entire chart, and it's in the Libran Dwad of Leo. It's in the first part of Leo, which is ruled by the planet Mars, according to the Tibetan. So we have the first decanate of Aries, ruled by Jupiter, and the first decanate of Leo, ruled by Mars. And Leo and Libra is the Dwad here. So this theme of balance is repeated. I was very interested, you know, in fact, it's a little bit contrived here. I chose this degree rising because of its wonderful symbol, which will be most meaningful to us. That is, the symbol is the constellations in the sky. The constellations in the sky. Well, the lords of these great constellations are mighty beings who are all within the heart, in the head center of the great supercosmic logos that we call the one about whom naught may be said. Apparently, we can't say too much about this great being. Anyway, these constellational lords are all in the crown center of this great being, and they feed us with their energy, and we grow accordingly by absorbing and applying correctly the energy that they give us. So when this particular degree said the constellations in the sky, I thought, well, yes, this is exactly our study. For how many years will we keep going? 5 years? Can we do it in 5 years? I don't know. We'll have to see how often I can talk to you about these things and how much you want to listen. So Leo has a tremendous connection with self-knowledge. Why do we study esoteric astrology anyway? You know, we have three different layers of the self. We have our ordinary personal ego self, lower ego. We're all familiar with that and have been for millions of years of incarnational experience. We also have the higher self, or the soul self, the higher ego with capital E, and this is our ego on the higher mental plane. If I were to go to our little map here again, this flower of red, green, and blue is the egoic lotus, and that's the second level of self to which Leo applies, and that is the I that is we, the I am that. So that's where we begin to realize our unity with all other forms of life, and especially at this point, with all human beings. And that is what we're working on now, which is soul consciousness and soul infusion. We want to have the sun in our heart. We want to have the egoic lotus pouring through our personality makeup. That's our next objective, but there is still a higher objective as well, and that is the third level of selfhood to which Leo can relate, and that is the I am that I am. I am that and that am I. And that is the spirit self. That is the one. So we have the I, the we, and the one. And all of these will be important to us. But of course, in this study, we're more interested in the first two, the personal self and its relation to the unitive self on the higher mental plane. Let's see what we can do with Leo, avoiding the rocks of pride and self-centeredness and limited vision due to over-absorption, you know, all those lesser things. Perhaps the constellations in the sky will keep our attention on those greater subjects. Well, I waited. I didn't really want to start a class with the moon in late Scorpio. I think Friedrich Nietzsche had about 29 degrees of Scorpio as his ascendant sign, and you know what he said, God is dead. I think only someone with late Scorpio rising could say that. And I didn't think that would be a great idea because, you know, we're getting into psychology, but hopefully we're not getting into the torture and pain of our inner psyche, you know, trying to see it from a bigger point of view. So I waited for Sagittarius, a spontaneous moon in Sagittarius. Well, you know, the moon is also the prison of the soul, esoterically speaking, and there's all kinds of hasty action which is possible in Sagittarius, and ill-coordinated action, and sudden spontaneous impulse of action, which is maybe a little bit what this webinar is, but the reason I chose this is because I'm going to be somehow very spontaneous with you. I have no real script. I've studied all this for a long time, and I'm just somehow going to rely on the fact that what I might say, without knowing what it is going to be, might be of value to you, and hopefully to me, because I hope to learn a lot by what I might say that I haven't thought about before. You never can tell. With the third ray, sometimes the mouth is in motion before the thoughts are coordinated, and then come the thoughts. There might be new ones, there might be good ones, so I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, Sagittarius aspiration, Sagittarius vision, a spontaneous movement towards the goal of illuminated thought in the field of astrology. I comfort myself by reminding myself that Einstein had the moon in Sagittarius, which gave him this very high orientation. So all of us involved in this kind of class are involved in a high orientation together. And I like the degree, it's very interesting, a grand army of the Republic campfire. Well, there was a high ideal there. You know, the GAR, the Grand Army of the Republic, was the Northern Army in the Civil War. And they fought for a principle which was the freedom of the human being. And we are interested as well in the freedom of the human being. Freedom through illumination, through light, through knowledge, through love, and through the will. So let's hope that Moon in Sagittarius works for us, and it certainly will give us that spontaneous flavor. Well, there's a lot of different positions here. I think we can study them as we go. One of the important ones is Saturn. It's retrograde, so we're going over material that we've studied before. It's in the third house of lower mind, and it's opposite Jupiter, which is very interesting because Saturn is green, Jupiter is blue. Well, Jupiter in a way represents the soul, whose basic quality is love, wisdom, the blue ray. Saturn is green, and one of its lower meanings is the personality of the individual, the four lunar vehicles which combine to make our personal self. It is the intelligence aspect. The personality is intelligence, the soul is love, wisdom, and the spirit is power. So we have an opposition here between Saturn and Jupiter. The contrast between the higher mind and the lower mind should be quite clear to us. The contrast between the soul and the personality should be quite clear to us as we go along together. I always like Saturn in the third house. I think it's powerful there because it has kind of a fifth ray feeling to it. You're willing to examine things closely. And, of course, Eris will help with that. Saturn is also opposed Mercury, widely. And if we look at the midpoint between Jupiter and Mercury, we'll combine these. 13 degrees and 21 degrees is 34, divided by 2 is 17. So Saturn is right opposed that midpoint of Jupiter-Mercury, Jupiter-Mercury-Eris. We are going to be able to discriminate between the triadal thought and concrete thought. And our goal here will be to build an astrological antikorana, which will allow us to unite the higher and the lower, so that abstract mind and concrete mind, along with soul mind, may all unite, and we will have what is called three minds unite. That's one of the ways of interpreting three minds unite, because we have them all together. And Mercury, of course, is one of the major symbols of the Antikorana, and there it is with Jupiter. You know, as a matter of fact, some of these discussions we have, we should actually begin with a meditation, and, you know, I think we'll try that. We'll try that with alignment. So, let's see. Circular paths. Circular paths is the symbol of this strong Saturn position with the so-called Uranian planet Zeus. I threw that in there just for fun because the Uranian planets were discovered by Alfred Witte in World War I, and they're out in the Pluto area. We don't know exactly what they are. They may simply be points. They may actually be planets, but they do work. And there is a tremendous canalization of energy through Zeus, the focus, the stream of powerful energy. So I thought with Saturn, we're going to be careful. We're going to be careful about what we do. We're going to try to think carefully. Even with that Sagittarian moon, we're going to try to think carefully. And with a degree of exactitude. You know, the second ray is the ray of meticulous entirety, meaning you want to go over the whole picture piece by piece with great clarity, so you see each piece with utter clarity and the relationships between all the pieces with utter clarity. So this would be a combination of the second ray and the fifth ray. I think we will have quite a focus on what we do. I don't want to skip the heliocentric Earth. The dawn of a new day, everything changed. Wow, I like that. That's in the third degree of Libra. The way you do these things is if, you know, this is like 2 degrees and 53 minutes, that means it's in the third degree. Let's say you're born and you're, you know, 6 weeks old. You're in your first year. When you're older than the year one, you've started your second year. And so it works with the degrees. This is the third degree and it's beautiful. I love that because monadically, the Earth is very important. Now, from a geocentric point of view, the Earth is in the middle of the chart. I mean, here we are on the Earth, and everything is apparently around us. But from the heliocentric point of view, if you were standing on the Sun and you were looking at the Earth, it would be in the sign Libra. And so, the dawn of a new day, let us hope that we can together discover things about esoteric astrology that we didn't know before. I mean, I'm beginning this for myself as a great exploration. Something I've been long meaning to do. And I think we're going to be successful. You know, we do have this wonderful grand trine going on here with the three fire signs. There is all this stuff in Aries, and it is trine by sign, and some of it by degree, to Leo and the constellations, which is trine to the moon in Sagittarius. So we will have that wheel of fire. We will be able to move. When the University of the Seven Rays was founded 23 and a half years ago, one day after Madame Blavatsky's birthday, on August 13th, 1987, we didn't quite make her birthday, but it's probably a good thing. We had that same wheel of fire, we had that same grand trine, and we have struggled and fought to bring the wisdom to a lot of people in a lot of different places. Moving with it, and may we move ahead with inspiration and fire into our subject. I think we can do that. There are other things we can discuss. Let's see what the position of Pluto is, because it's square. Birds in the house sing happily. Well, 7 degrees of Capricorn, 8 degrees of Capricorn, you know, Pluto and Capricorn is dragging down a lot of governments and a lot of old structures, but we do have a very, we have a degree of joy here, and we have a purificatory position for Pluto. What are we going to do with Pluto? I mean, it's squaring the Sun, squaring Uranus, and all of that. Pluto is the great eliminator, and hopefully it will eliminate within us the various unconscious and conscious obstacles to our greater illumination. Elimination for illumination. Pluto is the healer with the power of the serpent. One of the things I'm going to do is I have a lot of nice compilations in astrology, and I'm in some of these discussions, I'm just going to go right down the references, all gathered together. That's what you would call topical study, okay? We'll do that for the different planets, but we'll also read what the Tibetans said in context, because in this more horizontal way of reading in context, we're going to be able to understand the intricacy and the weaving of his thought and why he put one thing next to it to another. And yet he said also, study topically, and we're going to study topically as well. I mean, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe it'll take 10 years to do this. I don't know. Let's just see how it goes. Just keep me talking, and it'll take 10 years. Oh, goodness. Okay, so the birds are singing happily, and it's in a therapeutic house, the sixth house, where we clean up our life and straighten out our approach to discipleship, and we do that by eliminating many aspects of our nature, which don't no longer belong and no longer serve. Let's see what Vesta, which is the the flame, you see how flame-like it looks. It's the asteroid of commitment. Let's see what degree it's in. A water sprite. Okay, maybe we'll have some of the help of some of the little devas, but there's a degree of freedom there and playfulness as well. Of course, being in Capricorn, it's a great commitment. It's a real... you always work hard under Vesta. And it is square to our Mercury, so there's going to be a question of our commitment, and we will have to labor for this commitment. We have what it takes to do that. Pallas Athene is another asteroid. It is an extremely intelligent asteroid. Pallas was always helping the various heroes of Greek mythology outwit the gods. She was a warrior goddess, but she had tremendous strategy. Let's see what it says here in Aquarius. A council of ancestors. Well, I like that, because maybe we'll get some of the wisdom and knowledge from the ancestral gods, and maybe that will characterize some of our dialogue with each other. We'll try to arrange that as well. We have at the seventh house cusp, it is found, and that's where we're going to meet each other and dialogue with each other. There's just many things to say. I don't know if I really want to go more than 1 hour on this. I think there's about 10 minutes left, and no, a bit more than that. It looks like we have 19 minutes left, something of that nature. 19 minutes, that's good. So we'll have time for that. Okay, and where were we? Okay. Now, Venus is always lovely, and it's in the group sign Aquarius. It's in the Venus decanate of Aquarius, where brotherhood will at last, at the end of the Aquarian age, the last 700 years, where brotherhood will at last be available to us. Let's see what it says. A hydrometer. Well, it's got a very fifth ray indication. It's kind of a barometer. It's kind of an instrument for measuring pressure. Perhaps we will measure our group pressure by this hydrometer. It is another fifth ray indication, and we have a nice sextile here, pretty much of a sextile between Venus and Mercury, which is always a good sign, because then Buddhi, which is Mercury, and Manus, which is Venus, can be united, and that's what we want. Buddhi Manus. Now look, I realize, friends, that a lot of you who may be new to astrology, I'm using the language right away, okay? I am, in a way, trusting that you know a little something about astrology, the planets and the signs, or will be willing to learn about it, and then we will get into the description of these matters slightly with greater acuity as we go chapter by chapter. But yes, this first or second time, I'm definitely using the lingo of astrology, and just please bear with me if you will. The Neptune degree, Neptune is with Venus, moonlit fields, once Babylon, are blooming white. Well, I like, you know, Babylon was has a bad reputation, but it was once a great center of learning. And the great Chaldean astrologers for hundreds of thousands of years, says Madame Blavatsky, developed this science of which we have the barest fragment at this time. When I see Venus and Neptune together, I like it, because we have here Neptune, which is the higher octave of Venus. Eventually, Venus will be absorbed etherically into the planet Neptune. It's the synthesizing planet which will absorb this planet of the soul. So we have soul and monad together here within the group. We have a good indication for loving group soul. Wisely orchestrated, I hope. It is a sensitive group soul indicator, and it's a mixture of the seventh and eighth houses. We're going to be able, you know, this is occultism in the eighth house, and the union with the soul in the seventh. So let us hope that our soul power will be fed by the Buddhic plane and by the monadic plane where Neptune also has its connection. We have a very close connection here. Also, some Pisces planets, three of them, actually. We have Ceres and Chiron. Well, Ceres is the mother asteroid, and the asteroid that takes care, the caretaker, the tender, the one who harvests, the one who plants. It has to do, actually, with the word cereal. It has to do with that which nourishes us in the morning of our daily life. We hope that with great compassion and sensitivity coming from Pisces, we will be able to nourish our intuition, nourish the deeper sense of things that is sometimes found in the eighth house. And Chiron is in Pisces, too. And Chiron is the wounding and healing planet, the healing and wounding planet. It is having great wisdom. And of Pisces, we read that it is connected with pervasive wisdom. Aquarius with universal love and Pisces with pervasive wisdom. Let us hope that we will have the power to heal the psyche here. The psyche of all of us, the psyche of the group. Let's see what is said. The degree, a public market. Well, all kinds of things are available in full fruition. It makes a lot of, it's quite a combination here with Ceres as a nurturing asteroid and the, I've got to get back here, okay, and the public market where all of the produce is made available. And what is said about Chiron the healer, deep healing in the eighth house, a petrified forest. I have to ponder on that because we have the relics of the past preserved exactly as they were for us to refer to, and we can understand the deep history of the past by looking at these forests. It is a preservation of the past. Perhaps we will find something of a healing nature in that which has been preserved for us by the past. But there somehow there is a tending of the psyche here. It's very good in that respect. There is a sensitive approach to the psyche. Hopefully all of us will have that. Now look, you know, I say this is about astrology. Okay. These webinars are about astrology, yes. But astrology is the framework, and perhaps it gives me and gives us the opportunity to talk about the whole of the ageless wisdom within the astrological context. It, you know, the Tibetan wrote one book, not 19 or 24. I mean, it's all one book. It's all one CD-ROM. It's all one opus of wisdom and knowledge. So we will be relating many things to each other in a non-linear fashion. You know, linearity is good. It's very fifth ray. It's very Saturnian. You get to keep your mind straight when you choose a linear path. But it also denies you spherical realization. And we want to have that too. So we want our linear mind and our clarifying effects. And we also want our ability to see in wholes intuitively. So I like the Pisces planets there. We do have Crusader Mars in Crusading Pisces. What does it say? Oh, a materializing medium. Well, we don't want to materialize anything of a purely astral nature, but we do certainly want to materialize the higher thoughts, which are making their impression upon the group soul and the group mind. So hopefully we can bring something into concrete usefulness. Well, there is a nice grand trine, as I pointed out. There are some squares, of course. There are some challenges. The Pluto-Uranus square here is like the base of the spine and the top of the head. And if we can create some link between the top and the bottom so that we are in full alignment from the highest aspects of our nature to the lowest, that will be all well and good. Really, our purpose is to see widely, deeply, expansively, planetarily, systemically, cosmically. Our purpose is to see and to understand, to achieve kind of a divine vision, which is found on the Buddhic plane, and fifth level of the Buddhic plane, and even one day maybe to achieve realization, which is found on the fifth level of the atmic plane. Well, that's more for the masters, but we can begin to unite the different aspects of our mind and perhaps see deeply into these matters. And like Alice Bailey, have that amazing sense of awe, which came upon her when the Tibetan was dictating cosmic fire and astrology. She says, "I glimpsed things that he didn't say, that were implied in what he said, and just it showed me that what we were dealing with, as difficult and wonderful as it was only the ABCs of the magnificent subject of the ageless wisdom." So really, friends, I think our purpose is to expand our vision using astrology to do so. There are many different siddhis, powers, psychic powers, and so forth, to be found on the higher planes. And not that we can grasp them all at once, it will take us many incarnations to do so, but some of these are extremely revelatory, and the potentials of this chart show that strongly. Now, of course, you know, all of this may not be for everybody. It's going to be a long slog. It's going to be a study. And, you know, Pluto and the Sun, well, some might say, well, you know, this is not for me, and, you know, eliminate themselves or whatever. I would suggest, though, that we don't do that. Actually, I'm going to ask my friend Elena to look for the midpoints in this chart. I haven't gone into all of that, but I know that she will do a good job with that and perhaps reveal some of the subtler layers of these matters, and we can see some of the subtler dynamics. So look, we have group love going here. We have the quest for the self, the personal, the soul, and the spiritual self. We have a great expansion of vision, and we have the chance to use our will to bring down the higher archetypes, which are found in the level of the spiritual triad and even on the monadic plane. We're going to be into archetypal astrology as well as very practical astrology. If all goes well, I will do some of my work on physiognomy right here. And it just flashed upon me. We will do some famous people, and we'll show how the astrological chart may be related to their appearance, but you can maybe one point send in your own pictures, and we can look at your own astrological chart, and we can see some of the ways that the different zodiacal and planetary combinations actually work themselves out in kind of an astro heredity, which shows itself in the form and structure of your face and other parts of your body. Well, there's just so many potentials, and I guess I'm being very fire sign and expansive in talking about these things. Mercury is our highest planet. Well, Eris, of course, is, but Mercury is our highest sacred planet in the chart, and it will be, I'm just wondering, I'm hoping, yeah, everything is recording, yeah, gotta check it out. That illumination, it's in its own sign esoterically. I think we will have a downpouring of new ideas. One thing I didn't mention that I really wanted to is I kind of calculated this out as well, or had a little help from my friends here, to let the anti-vertex, which is a point of pure unconditioned will, just the way the vertex is the point of fate, this anti-vertex is within a half a degree of the star Rigel. Rigel is one of the brilliant stars of Orion. The last time I read about it, it was 60,000 times brighter than our sun. 60,000 times brighter. It's the star of education. And it means to dispense knowledge and to receive knowledge. Somehow, in the Egyptian terms, it means the foot of the pharaoh, and to be under the foot of the pharaoh is to receive the great knowledge. So we have this star of education rising, not rising, but it's on our anti-vertex. Well, in a way, the anti-vertex is kind of an ascendant. You can set up a chart for the anti-vertex rising. So we have, it's an adventure into new forms of knowledge, and in a way I think we are blessed by this particular star. Well, look, you know, friends, there's, you know, three more hours on this chart that we could do if we start really taking it apart and looking at all the aspects and so forth. We, you know, we're a very sensitive group, I do think so, and the moon is square Neptune, and the moon is square Venus, so, you know, we are going to receive impressions, and we have to watch out for any glamours that might come our way. But I think that good old Saturn, which is semi-square the moon, will be very useful to us in keeping our head on straight. Now, I know that all of this is not as easy for you as if perhaps I was just talking in a linear manner. I like to talk in linear. I've written out some things in a fairly linear manner, but as I begin to expand upon them, it will be anything but linear. You'll just have to kind of tolerate this approach to spherical knowledge. Everything in a great sphere of knowledge, everything relating to everything else. And I do believe it will stimulate the pure reason within us, the intuition, the ability to see in wholes. We will see and sense the detail of the whole and understand all of these relations. So, just in summary, as we are reaching the end of our first hour here, we have the Sun in Aries, conjunct Uranus, conjunct Jupiter, conjunct Mercury. The pioneering effort, I come forth, and from the plane of mind I rule. Let Atma descend, and let the higher will descend into our minds, and let the archetypes present themselves to us. We have Leo, the rising sign, indicating the soul. We will understand ourselves better. Know thyself. Socrates had Leo rising, according to the chart we use of him, actually the 29th degree of Leo. And then we go, we can go to the moon for inspiration and for exuberance and for enthusiasm and for aspiration. That's great. We need that. But I really want to focus on the earth here. It's in the sign Libra. And that's where the monad comes in. That's where the true spirit aspect comes in. A dawn of a new day, everything changed. That's what we want. We want our understanding of esoteric astrology revolutionized, renovated, so that we can see in a new and true way. So, friends, the great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. The note G. Thank you, everyone. Tomorrow is Moria Remembrance Day, March 24th. We will continue. I will make this available to you. And we will move into the book. Many blessings to everybody.